Pastor Mai, good evening, and welcome to this week's episode of Agenda. I'm Dolan Mercer. On the programme tonight, more local authority rates are set. We hear from two sets of commissioners about their plans for the next financial year. We also hear about a far greater financial conundrum, how to solve the funding gap in public sector pensions, arguably the defining issue of domestic policy in this administration and beyond. It's rate-setting season for local authorities around the island. Last week, we heard from lead members of three sets of commissioners, Colin Leather of Castletown, Dr. Michelle Haywood of Port St Mary and Robin Turton of Onchan. We turn our attentions to the island's capital now, where ratepayers will see a 3.3% increase from April to 443 pence in the pound. Local Democracy reporter Ewan Gorn spoke to David Christian about the reasons behind the rise.
We knew from an early stage that this year we were going to see increases in relation to national insurance, so that's added a considerable sum to our rates, and we've got no control over that, but it's got to be paid. Also, the PSC pay award, we'd allowed 2% last year. That was based on government actually indicating that they wanted a 1% and that government departments would have to find it within their existing budgets. So we thought, based on the previous year, let's go for 2, make sure we're covered in it, and of course we were still £140,000 short. Now, we've absorbed that this year because of vacancies, but it's now got to be added straight onto next year's rates bill, along with the 2.5 pay award that's already been awarded. And then, of course, we've had the increase in the indexation figure for the gate fee, which has added another £60,000, and that's 5.73%, more than double the RPI, Manx RPI, for the month of December. So there's costs there that we've got no control over whatsoever. We've got those costs, and then also, throughout the last several months, we've been looking for as many savings and reductions and producing new income as we possibly can. So we've managed to cushion the blow today because we've actually found reductions and savings and new income of £770,000. If we hadn't have done that, then it would have been a far greater increase today. On saying that, if we found those savings and not had the government costs passed on, there probably would have been no rate increase today. And I think one or two members actually indicated there possibly could have been a rate reduction. So lots of this comes down to, unfortunately, the things we've got no control over.
The package of savings, some in the council suggested they could have been considered cuts. How do you respond to that? And can you tell us what actually has been done to achieve that 770,000 figure?
Yeah, well, part of that is, we brought in new income of over 111,000 this year, and some of that's through license agreements and other areas, so there's a number of things that make that up. But we've also made savings of over 303,000 in staff reductions, so there is another 8.7, equivalent of 8.7 full-time staff going off our books now.
I mean, are services suffering from those reductions?
No, at the moment they're not. We've had to look at working smarter, we've had to look at greater use of digitalisation, we've also had to do some restructures within the council, and where certain posts have become vacant within a section, we've literally had to speak to the staff and turn around and say, well, look, it's not being filled, and unfortunately, you're going to have to pick up the slack now. I'm watching that very closely because I am concerned it is going to put some pressure on some staff, because in the last 7 years, we've actually reduced the workforce by 38. That's a large number for the size of the authority that we are. They are spread across the services, and some of those have gone because of the services gone, so like the horse trams went. So staff, of course, went over to government or were made redundant. So the savings are made up from that sort of area, and I say we got to a figure of 770,000 this year.
What is the message to ratepayers in terms of something optimistic, looking forward to what the borough can provide for the next financial year?
I am optimistic, and I say to the ratepayers, OK, there's an increase this year, it's 3.3%, but you can go online, you can look at what the increase has been for the last 9 years, and as I say, it's been, RPI was 49, we only got up 12.5%, so we are very conscious, and we are very reluctant to pass any increase on at all. And I think we can safely demonstrate that over the last 9 years it's there. But even in this budget this year, we have put some growth items in, because I don't want this council to be a council that just stands still, that puts nothing new into the borough, because that comes back to bite you at a later date. We had some year in years gone by, and I'm going back 20-odd years, where there was next to no investment by the council. And we've seen some huge increases then. 24% was the increase on 1 year of the rates going up, you know, because suddenly everybody decided, you know, lots of things need doing. So we built some growth and investment in this year, mainly around leisure. So we are seeing the new skate park at Nobles Park going ahead. It's been called for a number of years. Mm. We're going to continue to invest in Summer Hill Glen because that is a huge attraction, getting tens of thousands of people down there, locals and visitors each year. So we think we are correct to continue to invest in that. But we're also investing to save. So we are continuing the rollout of LED lighting because that is going to produce £157,000 a year savings in electricity costs. But we've also got other areas as well, like the promenade scheme, thankfully happening, but it's costing Douglas ratepayers £830,000 to put all new lighting in. And we're not doing that just because of the promenade scheme. That lighting has actually come to the end of its life. We've taken the opportunity to do it at the same time because I think if we came along in 5 or 6 years' time and said to the DOI, do you know what? We're just going to dig it up to put some lights in. I think we'll be told where to go. So there's those sort of costs built into this budget as well. So it's an optimistic budget. It's a budget of growth. It's a budget of investment. It's a budget where there have been reductions and savings made. Some of the reductions some members referred to is actually a rebalancing of the budgets where we were over-optimistic in the last 2 years of what income levels could be. So it's shown a reduction this year. It's actually bringing them back down to a more realistic level based on the actual for the last financial year. So a lot of work's gone into this. I think I've demonstrated there today the scrutiny that this council puts into this budget. You know, it's £11.5 million revenue. It's over £15 million worth of capital schemes. You know, members have to really put the hours in. I thank them all for that. But I'd say to ratepayers, yes, this is an increase, but it works out at, for a typical three-bedroomed house, because I know your houses are based on your rateable value, a typical three-bedroom house, it'll work out at 31 pence a week increase. When you look at the range of services that the borough provides, the workforce that we have to provide that, that is the best that we could actually get it to, bearing in mind the costs passed on by government.
And you aren't expecting any reduction in services or change in services, are you?
No, not at the present time. In fact, we are talking to other people out there because I've had several meetings with a couple of developers who are looking to possibly develop some brownfield sites, looking at possibly incorporating more car parking in with the scheme that they want to do. This will give the opportunity to generate some more income. As these brownfield sites obviously get developed, that will increase the rateable income coming into the town, which will help sustain any rate increases into the future. You know, so I would say it is positive. It's not doom and gloom. Very reluctant to pass anything on, but there was just no way we could have done it any other way. I've heard some local authorities turn around saying, well, you can use reserves or you can use any underspends from last year. If you use underspends from the previous year, they should only be used to do a one-off scheme, because if you use it to subsidise the rate this year, you're playing catch-up next year. Straight away, you've got to find that to make the rate up, because once you've spent it, it's gone. And likewise, you should never take out of reserves. And thankfully, we have got healthy reserves. They are there for a rainy day. We've called on them to do one-off schemes. We've called on them when we've needed to deal with a dilapidated property where the owner's not there. We do need those. So we are in a healthy position with our reserves, but you shouldn't use reserves to help balance out the rate. Because once you've spent it once, the next year you have a double whammy and a double impact on the ratepayers. So this is sensible planning, and I think it stands up to scrutiny.
Mr. McNichol brought up the boundary extension potential issue, which is one that has been discussed in the past, but you said you're not that keen on that idea anymore. But I mean, if the town's being hollowed out by businesses going to greenfield sites on the edges, moving into Braddon, etc., do you not feel that that might be a way to go if incentivising brownfield development doesn't happen? I mean, we've had lots of brownfield sites that have been there for quite some time.
Yeah, I think there's a determination within government at the moment, and Bill Shimmings chaired a select committee which I appeared before, and we put forward several suggestions and proposals to try and incentivise people to develop these brownfield sites. And I think it needs a real joined up approach throughout the whole of government coming together, not working in silos, because there's still obviously some of that going on up the road, working closely with the local authority, working closely with the business and industry to try and ensure that those sites are developed first. We need those sites developed. We need people working in the town. That then boosts the daytime and the nighttime economy within the borough. And that is imperative for the town to continue to move forward and thrive. We've seen major investment in the infrastructure, the whole of the shopping area. By the time Duke Street is done down to Market Hill, it's complete. The promenade now being done. Now we need to use that to encourage the new business to come in, use that to encourage the development of brownfield sites, more people in the town, more money being spent. That then encourages more investment from outside investors to come in. And as I say, not just the daytime economy, the nighttime economy is very important as well. And that's why the council is very supportive of any of these brownfield sites being developed, if it can include any part of accommodation that brings people back living down in Lower Douglas as well. That is a definite boost to the nighttime economy. It's been proved time and time again in many other places. You know, so I don't think the boundary extension is right at this time. And I think if I was in one of those other local authorities sitting there as a commissioner, I would turn around and say, this is Douglas just trying to do a rate grab. You know, the time will come. The time will come, I'm sure, that when these brownfield sites are developed, that a councillor of that time will be knocking on the door of government and saying, look, you've got businesses coming. They want to develop it within Douglas. There's nowhere left. We need a boundary extension. The last one was in the early 80s. So who knows? Sometime in the future, I'm sure it's going to happen, but the time is not right.
The books themselves, now, did you always get social media? We know it's the new online pub, basically, yes. And people saying, you know, the Corpies books are difficult to read. And to be fair, in the past, the yep. books have been difficult to interpret, and it's not always been obvious exactly what you're looking at. But things have changed a bit this year.
Big change this year. We've looked at the way, in particular, local authorities are doing it across, and they changed a number of years ago. We would have all our central support services, so all our chief officers and HR and health and safety, would literally get proportioned out across every service that we do. So even the chief executive, for example, could book 1% of her time to the golf course, you know, because they just had to spread all those costs right the way across. We need those officers. We employ them. So now we've just brought all those budgets together under the correct headings for the service they provide. For example, the garage. The garage, if anyone looked in our book, everyone knows our garage up at the service centre, was shown zero because all their costs were spread across every service. Now it shows it costs £700,000 to run that service and look after the 300 vehicles, well, vehicles and plant. We've got about 85 vehicles, the rest is plant, to do that. So now if anybody picking that book up can actually see more clearly what the actual cost is of a particular service. I'm pleased to be a leader of a council that is far more transparent than it was when I came in here, because you'd come to some council meetings, and believe you me, often it was split 50-50 on what was private and what was public. Now I'd say it's 98% public, and the bit that is private can be staffing or contractual matters that at that time cannot be made public. So we are open, we are there to be scrutinised, and like I said today, rather than social media and people tearing the backs out of us, there's many ways you can connect and talk to us as councillors. Do it through the proper channels, you will get a positive response.
Douglas Council leader David Christian there, speaking to local democracy reporter Ewan Gorn. So, Douglas up 3.3%, Braddon up 0.5%, Port St Mary up 2%, Onchan up 2%, but rates in Ramsey are set to go up 9.6%. It's worth noting that increase only applies to the town rate, which is less than half of the annual rates bill at 45%, but it still equates to approximately 86 pence per week for a typical three-bedroomed property in the town. I spoke to Chairman Andy Cowie and Ewan McGuinness, Lead Member for Finance, and asked the obvious question. Why so high?
Well, basically, there's two main reasons. The first is that we have been undercharging our rates for the last 5 years or so, and we had a gradual plan to bring that into line with our requirements so that we weren't eating into our reserves, which remain healthy. And secondly, we have been hit, as I'm sure you've heard from several of the other commissions around the island, we have been hit with some substantial charges, which are a significant proportion of this rate increase, which are out of our control, really. A number of items mandated by central government that we have been unable to do anything about, apart from pay them in the forthcoming year. And whilst we had budgeted amounts for some of them, a pay rise would be foolish to budget for not having one. The scale of the pay rise that's been agreed by the PSC has been significantly more than we were expecting. And there's been some major impact from the National Insurance Contributions change, pensions increase, and indeed the waste charges, which have gone up by quite a significant amount in excess of inflation. So we're kind of left in a double whammy situation, whereby we're hit with a lot of unexpected charges, and we also need to continue on our recovery path. And plus, we don't want to stop investing in Ramsey. It's absolutely vital that we keep up the momentum, the work we're doing. And whilst we've been very, very scathing on a lot of the projects we've been looking at this year, we've been taking a real close look at every penny we're spending on the rates, we still don't want to stop doing that good work in the town.
just to sort of recap on a couple of points then. So we're going up 9.6% to 399 pence in the pound. Mm-hmm. Is there any indication how much of that is sort of forced upon you by, you mentioned some of the changes from central government and a bit about national insurance. Is there a kind of a breakdown there?
Yeah, I can absolutely say that 18 pence is to do with the charges we've been imposed upon by national government.
And then that rise is also to incorporate, hopefully, more investment in the town.
That's right, yes. We don't want to stop improving the town. There are some you know, some things like vehicles and plant that do need to be replaced on an ongoing basis, and we can't just leave those.
Are there any other plans for the forthcoming year about what the commissioners might be investing in?
Yeah, we've got quite an exciting project in place for the TT. We're hoping to do something, a little sort of mini sprint festival at TT. We're increasing our budget slightly on fireworks, which have been an absolute glorious success over the recent years, just sort of maintaining that high standard. We're looking at improving amenities around the town, sort of water stations to go alongside the sort of eco feel of, for refilling around the Moorook Park area.
Yeah, we're looking at perhaps improving the beach bathing,
yes,
facilities,
yeah,
around the North Prom as well, to celebrate the fact we have the cleanest water on the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
You and I had a chat a little while ago, Drew, and I think it was soon after TT with the Bushies TT Village and obviously the Hooded Ram involvement as well down on Douglas Front, and we spoke a bit about what can be done to perhaps keep Ramsey as a focal point as well, because ultimately, especially at TT, with lots of visitors, you know, big influx of people coming in, there must be a pressure to try and keep Ramsey exciting for people.
Yeah, and I think we're very lucky in Ramsey to have had the sprint, you know, which has been a marquee event for years, and I think that's made us rest on our laurels. So we're hoping to tie into that and stop it just being come for the sprint during the day and then go back home, but stay in Ramsey for the evening. So that's why we've sort of centred it around that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, have it in the centre of Ramsey, some bands, some other amenities, stalls, hoping to get some street entertainment over, just something a bit different, just to keep the town centre alive. And just say, if you're a biker or a local in the north of the island, you don't have to keep on coming into Douglas to have your entertainment in the evening. You can stay in Ramsey and have a great time too.
And not just in summertime, but there's some community events in Ramsey in the winter as well. One that caught my eye was there was a Beach Buddies event at Moorook Park not that long ago, which appeared to get pretty amazing turnout, really.
Yes, it was absolutely tremendous. There was around about 300 people estimated down there helping out.
Was it like one of the most well-attended Beach Buddies events they've ever had?
Yes, it was, yes. Yeah. And it was great to see such a community involvement in what was a fairly unpleasant day as well. A lot of people getting covered in mud and dirt.
Must be a bit of pride in that for you.
Oh, very much, yes. It was great to see so many people pulling together for the benefit of a big asset, a key asset to the town, I think.
I think that's something I'd love to see keep going in Ramsey as well, that community spirit come together, everyone in the community working together to make Ramsey like a great place to live.
Ramsey is a community, there's no question,
yeah,
about it. And that's one of its key strengths, I think.
Another thing that we've heard lots from you about, Mr. Carey, in recent months is developments with the courthouse. Is there anything new to update us upon there?
Not specifically. We're going down a path. We have an interested party who's got some very, very interesting and solid proposals with a big community involvement, which will... we're still going forward with. We have some meetings arranged quite soon, and as soon as we have anything concrete, we'll be pleased to share that with everyone.
Yeah, and
but it's good news. We're using the courthouse at the moment as well, yeah. So it's not like it's sat there empty. There's some great events happening, especially the Christmas period. There's some
I think it's important to say as well, this is still the same process that we started in May last year. Nothing's changed on that. We went out with expressions of interest. We're still dealing with the same people that came forward then, and that's just it's longer. I think it's fair to say it's taken longer than we wanted it to. But it's in the centre of town, it's the heart of Ramsey. Making the right choice is far more important than making the quick choice.
And the proposals you will have seen, doubtless, about the quite grand vision for a Ramsey Marina, which would require significant investment. In the more medium term, what kind of effects could that have, do you think?
Well, medium term, and I think it is it's a great opportunity for Ramsey if it's done properly and effectively, and there's a good team behind it as well. It's a fairly plausible group of people. It could have a significant impact. Additional retail, residential, the marina will bring a lot of visitors to the town and could change the makeup of Ramsey itself. There are some downsides we need to consider. The impact of losing the beach needs to be carefully thought about, and planning will be a big concern for some of the residents around there, although there aren't perhaps as many residents on that part of the front as you might think.
I think it's fair to say it's very early stages. It's very big ideas stuff.
I was just going to say the same. I didn't want to imply it was a concrete plan by any means, but for me, an idea.
I'm very interested to see how it develops. I think it's too early to sort of say yes or no on it at the moment. It's just let's see what they can offer.
So if we're sort of sitting here again in a number of years' time, perhaps looking a bit further into the future, if these plans did come to any sort of fruition with more investment in Ramsey sort of town centre, perhaps a new look pier, we could be looking at a very different town.
I think the heart of Ramsey will stay the same. It's a community. It's the capital of the north, the home of independent retail. And I don't see anything that would really change on that, although visually, yes, there would be some significant differences potentially.
I think... really just a continuation of what's been happening in the past few years. You make a great point, independent retail. I think we're so lucky in Ramsey to have so many independent shops, and it's a real strength of the town. And I think there's just a real feel-good feeling around Ramsey at the moment. I think it is up and coming, and that's probably just going to continue in an organic growth, I hope.
It's certainly something we as a commission are keen to promote and continue with.
Andy Cowie and Ewan McGuinness from Ramsey Town Commissioners there. Now, from the finances of local authorities to the finances of national government, arguably the defining issue of domestic policy in this administration and beyond, how to solve the funding gap in public sector pensions. Last week, Minister of Policy and Reform Chris Thomas said he felt he'd been thrown into the lion's den at a meeting of the Positive Action Group on the topic. He gave a frank and detailed insight into the state of the legacy funding gap before a somewhat disgruntled and vocal audience. The current model relies upon ongoing contributions to the fund from about 7,000 active members. Afterwards, I asked Mr. Thomas what happens if public sector workers stop paying into their pension schemes.
I agree. 6 or 7 years ago is also important because that's the time when people began to realise that we had two issues. We had making the public sector pensions affordable into the future, and the fact that there was a legacy from mums and dads and grandmas and granddads of the past, and it wasn't fair to current members and future members to pick up the tab for people in the past. So we separated it out into two issues. A future issue, public sector pension reform we call that, and a legacy funding issue, which is what we were talking about primarily tonight. So we're in a better position because we've accepted that there's a difference. We're also in a better position because we've accepted that we have got a legacy funding gap. We've got a medium-term financial plan that I believe is realistic, and what we're now doing is we're trying to make sure that everybody accepts the truth about where we are.
But it's a model that relies upon confidence of those contributing to it. We heard from the audience examples of, there's a nurse and a teacher giving their perspectives who, I mean, I can't help but felt quite disillusioned with changes to their terms in previous years.
Yeah, you're right. I had a very clear slide up there which showed that we'd all be in a worse position in the next few decades if the public sector pension scheme collapsed. What I'm trying to do is to manage reform and to manage that funding gap so that we preserve the confidence for members in the schemes about their futures and what they'll get when they get older, and also public acceptance in terms of intergenerational fairness, but also between the private sector and the public sector in terms of pensions. And what I acknowledge this evening is that we do need to do a lot inside the public sector schemes, which we're doing, but we also do need to do a lot to make sure that we help people outside the public sector tackle their futures and their retirements.
As you've alluded towards there, there's been some comments on social media which were then echoed tonight from people in the private sector that they've been forgotten about, if you like. Are those concerns fair, do you think?
Oh, they are. You can't do everything at once. You've got to prioritise where you apply political attention and where you apply resource in terms of dealing with issues, getting lawyers to give you advice, getting actuaries to work on it. And I made a pledge tonight that we would try to work with people outside the public sector to try and persuade younger people about what they needed to do for their future. It's about communication. It's about recognising that the world is hard now for us because, hey, we've got that problem that we all live a bit longer on average. We've got the problem that interest rates are quite low at the moment. There are more of us.
You coined the term pensions poverty tonight, and there's an immediate pressure, isn't there, on people who are finding themselves in a far more stretched position perhaps in retirement than they thought they would be.
I deliberately use that phrase. And Economic Affairs, we have information from the tax database which shows us quite clearly that we do have an issue. We've got the state pension as a safety net. There are issues about how that's paid. That's changing on 1st of April where we move over to the Manx single tier pension. But on top of that, the British system, the British Island system, the Isle of Man system has always relied on people making arrangements for themselves. One way of doing that is inside an occupational pension scheme. There are alternatives across that we could bring here. But what we now need to do is we now need to apply some thought, creating the right products with local providers for all people in our island.
Sometimes people's political memories can be quite short, but it wasn't very long ago government effectively wrote off a large or substantial amount of debt from the NUA, and the public opinion around that, we know how that went. Is this at risk of producing a similar kind of reaction? I mean, in terms of the proportions, that now seems like a bit of a drop in the ocean.
That's it. The NUA has a £500 million financial liability. It has that's the total amount of its debt. We're talking about much larger numbers with and the actuarial liability of pensions, but it's different. We don't actually owe that. That's a calculation of what will be due in present value terms, as it's called.
Minister of Policy and Reform Chris Thomas there. Well, that's it for tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week. You can listen again to this episode online on demand at manxradio.com, and now you can listen as a podcast. In the meantime, have a good evening.